Hey there, Friday Night Movie listeners. Here we are with part two of our Avengers Endgame special. We pick up right where we left off. Lily is asking which characters die. So I can't warn you enough, there are a ton of spoilers coming. But it is a lot of fun, and we hope you enjoy.
Who are the four that die?
Well, you have
Vision doesn't make it.
Your Vision, well, he can't be brought back because isn't he alive because of one of the stones?
Yeah.
Isn't that like keeps him? So Vision, and then you have
which is
Gamora.
Fine. Nobody likes Vision.
That one actually makes sense.
And then you have Gamora, who Thanos sacrifices in Infinity War to get the Soul Stone, and the idea that she can't be brought back because she was like traded for the Soul Stone.
Like,
same thing happens.
Real sad.
Yeah, same thing happens to Black Widow. In order to get the Soul Stone in this movie, she dies so that they can bring the stone back. And then it's like the very ending. You sure you want me to tell you the very, very ending?
I mean, is it Cap? It's Cap.
No. In fact,
he dies of old age.
Yeah. We'll get into the battle of one of my favorite scenes. My favorite moments. And at the very, very end of the movie, the final snap is given by Tony Stark.
Well, why are people snapping?
That's
why
exactly my point. This movie is like fucking blown up the Death Star with how many snaps there are.
The stones kill him. The power of the stones kill him.
Oh, good. Thank God. No
and then
more
he dies.
Fireman movies.
No more.
But like, no more. But this
although
is,
they
is,
went
but
a power
Pepper,
just,
wait,
so.
So what you're saying is Pepper Potts gets brought back. But not.
She also gets her own Iron Man suit.
I have this moment of being like, see, we do have all these female superheroes. I'm like, don't you dare put Pepper Potts in there pretend she's one of the ladies.
So this is really important. So this is really important to me.
With that.
Because this is really important to me because we said this a while ago where I said, I want to see an all-female Avengers movie in the sense that they now have characters that
they
are so
good. They just killed Black Widow. They could have chosen somebody
else.
Yeah,
they literally just killed Black Widow in the same movie.
But I mean, so they have, but they've now with Shuri and with Valkyrie and with Captain Marvel, you have a large group of really interesting and fun characters who have good chemistry. Gamora, right? You've got these great female characters.
Wasp.
Nebula, Wasp. Like, it isn't the early days of Avengers where it was all dudes. And so I've been saying for a while that I would love to see that movie because not because they're female, but because those characters are just so strong, you don't need to have the other ones. And then the moment there where they assemble them all together to me was so, like, it was cool because you had all the female characters on screen together and it was a nod. But on the other hand, it was beyond pointless that it diminished them because Captain Marvel, who blows up Thanos' entire ship by herself.
With one shot, is
charging across the battlefield to deliver the battlefield to like
and it's
deliver
like,
the
how
gloves.
Will you get there?
And then all of the female
like,
characters
we'll
appear.
Protect you.
And I'm like, really, Captain Marvel needs Wasp's help. I feel
yeah,
like
no, I thought
what
the
are
same
the rules,
thing.
People?
Now I 100% agree with you. It made me cringe. It made me cringe, and then I also cried. But it for sure made.
Well, no, but that's what I mean about the diagonal horse. It's a great moment that is unearned.
It's a
and
great
also,
moment. But
wouldn't
it's...
it have been great if they said, we'll protect you, and Captain Marvel's like, I mean, if it makes you feel better.
Yeah,
you
that, know would have I mean? Been, that would have been much better or directed them somewhere else because Captain Marvel, their characters should not exist just to protect Captain Marvel, who doesn't need their protection. That's the whole point of having these characters is that they can take care of themselves. They're heroes in their own right. And they make up for it a little bit at the end, but that could have been such a – if that moment had been earned, it would have been great. But instead, it's like this –
it's
like
a moment.
This side moment. Now I'm going to go bold with the battle scene, though.
Okay, go bold because – okay, go.
What I think was the most unearned moment of the movie is Captain America holding that.
Oh my God!
That hammer.
By the way, he takes it from the past. So let's stop talking about how you can't change the past.
Because then now Thor doesn't have a hammer in the entire past.
Yeah, Thor doesn't have a hammer for like after the second Thor movie. It's fucking absurd.
He brings it back, though. He takes it with him when he goes in the time machine at the end.
Oh, stop it. It's like...
I thought only Thor, a god, demigod or whatever, could actually pick it up.
Well, you have to be worthy. By the way, which is one of my favorite moments. It was one of my favorite moments in Infinity, in Age of Ultron, is that little subtle hammer move is so great, right? But then in this movie, he doesn't pick it up and throw it to Thor. He picks it up and spins it around like Thor and then uses lightning powers. So, like, I don't mind that Captain America can lift the hammer as some huge Hail Mary move, but he's not Thor. That just doesn't work.
Yeah, I agree with you. The fact that he was channeling lightning was absolutely ridiculous, and it undermined Thor's as, like, the god of thunder.
Because that was the whole plot of the freaking Ragnarok.
I did love that he could wield the hammer and that he was able to call it because he's worthy. That, for me, when that happened, I cheered Chai.
I thought it was great.
Was it?
But then when he started channeling the lightning, I was like, bullshit. You're not a demigod. No, thank you.
Look, Cap. But I did hold him over. Cap he's being worthy of holding the hammer. It filled my heart. I got teary. It was exciting.
Yeah, super cool.
And I guess I read somewhere that maybe there's some reference in Age of Ultron where they're all trying to move the hammer, and maybe he moves it a bit.
Yeah, he moves it like a millimeter.
That's what they said. Yeah.
And
I got that part's all great.
And so like I didn't remember that at all though. So for me, I'm like, what is going on here?
But by the way, if he just lobbed it over to Thor, you would have went, what? You know, it would have been one of those moments. Like, there's another movie where somebody just walks in and grabs something they're not supposed to grab and tosses it. What movie was that? Anyway, it's like a beat in another movie. But can I like go on that same note? Can I make a couple of other shitty passive aggressive jokes? Like,
yes. That's my favorite kind of joke.
Okay, so by the way, Lily, the plot is that Tony Stark makes another Infinity Gauntlet to put the stones on, right?
Why?
Well, remember in the other movie where they had like the giant dwarf who used the power of a sun to forge a glove for Thanos? Remember that one?
Yes.
And like Thor
You're
had
right.
to
that was in Ragnarok.
Yeah, no, or that was Infinity. It was Infinity War.
Infinity War.
So you know that like they said it needed like the power of a sun, and you know who built a glove off camera? Tony Stark.
That is true. I didn't even remember that, but you're right. But I was
to get a good size magical hammer, you need the power of the sun and like a dwarf on another planet. But they also said
that's where Thanos got the glove.
No, that's where he made the glove for Thanos. That dwarf made
the second glove Tony can make.
He made it
off screen, out of parts. Yeah, he just made it. It's fine. Don't worry.
Iron Man parts.
Yeah, I had the pieces. I ordered them off Amazon. Like, so anyway, the other thing too is it's a human shape, and then they go, well, who's gonna wear it? And then there's this sort of selfless moment where Hulk says, I'll wear it. So the glove magically transforms, like in that Tony Starkian kind of like unfolds and folds back up into Hulk-sized glove. So not only has he made an Infinity Gauntlet that he said he was gonna wear, he made it just in case Thor-sized. Right now you're going. Now, Tony, love it. I love that you made a glove off camera. Fine, no problem. I love that it can hold the Infinity Stones. You think it's a bad idea that it can get big enough for Thanos to wear? Do you think we should keep it? Do you want to keep it small enough so that Thanos can? And then you go, okay, fine. Hulk's going to put it on. Okay, good compromise. Now, you know how you put jets on all the pieces of your Iron Man armor in every movie so far so it can fly off and come on? Do you want to put some jets on that glove in case Thanos puts it on? You know
and
what
then
I mean?
It like. Could... Good jet plot. Off him and go to you. Back.
Can I ask perhaps a silly question? Why make another glove?
Exactly. Why can't you just make fucking braces and put the gloves in your braces like you know what I mean? Like diamonds in your teeth. Like
No. I mean, why do they need to make some sort of apparatus, braces or glove to bring people back?
Well, that's the idea. They're going to snap again and undo the snap.
Right, the snap.
But this is what I mean is, like, they should just be able to, like, hold, like, can't they make, like, a fist with all the jewels and go, come back? Like, it's not about a glove. It's not about a snap.
And so Tony brings everybody back and, like, accidentally kills himself?
No,
here's one thing
Hulk
that
snaps his fingers.
Let me jump in here. Say one thing they establish is that you have to be of a certain level of strength and like cosmic strength to destroy the world. Well, no, because Thanos is a borderline cosmic being. He's a right, and Hulk is that level of strength, and it almost kills Hulk. Hulk's whole side of his head gets melted when he does the snap. So the idea that a regular mortal like Tony could perform the snap and survive, they had been hinting at. Now, one of the odd things, though, is that Thor, we haven't even talked about Fat Thor yet.
I know we haven't gotten to it.
But Thor, who's this incredible, who's supposed to be this hero, who is a demigod and is at least as strong as Hulk, could have also been a candidate, and they just decide he's not emotionally ready to give him the glove. Which is, by the way, them saying that for plot reasons. Now you've like messed with my head, because I'm like, why didn't they just say, well, for plot reasons, we can't have Thor be the one to do the snap because
that's what they did.
Instead, they make him literally like so emotionally fragile. Lily, he's like, he gains a ton of weight, and he has this huge beard, and he cries all the time, and he has like no courage.
No.
They literally call him Lebowski. They call him Lebowski in the movie, and he's dressed like.
Yep. There's by the way, one of the things he does when he powers up at the end is just snaps his fingers, gets struck by lightning, and his beard braids itself.
His beard braids, but he doesn't get thinner.
Does he lose weight?
No, he doesn't.
Can I get
that?
Still very large, Thor.
By the way, does that mean Thor has to do push-ups? And I'm not joking about
Does he hit? Does a demigod not have like demigod metabolism?
I thought the whole point was he drank beer.
That's
like
a fat Superman.
Well, fat Superman doesn't work.
He was also fighting bad guys and running around like crazy. Now he's just playing video games, drinking beer.
That's what I said.
So like. Does he have to lift weights?
Well, he was just living a more active lifestyle on Asgard before. And now he's just sitting around playing video.
What you're saying is Thor eats his feelings.
Yes. No, that's literally
what they say.
Is New Asgard on Earth?
Yeah, that's what they're saying.
It's just like some town in Finland.
Not going to work out well for anyone.
No, a town in New Jersey next to
Americans are not going to be receptive to that.
So Fat Thor was funny, but it was also... And Chris Hemsworth, who I think is, I'm glad that he's not being jettisoned, because that guy
he's the best
bona fide movie star. He can do comedy, he can do action. I'm gonna see this new Men in Black thing just because he's in it.
Him and Tessa Thompson,
like a piece of trash. Right?
Yeah, that trailer is not good.
The only thing, I wasn't Valkyrie included in the like time.
Endgame.
Travel
They never
explained how Valkyrie survived the slaughter of all of Asgard, right? But they just
she did survive with Thor.
No,
right?
they don't show it, it all happens off camera, they make you
guess for that whole movie
what her fate is
after Thanos kills everybody on that ship. So that's kind of a bummer, because I think you're robbing us of her ingenuity and
it was a bit of a bummer.
I just think that like it's again credit to Chris Hemsworth who just sells it, but it was an odd plot device to kind of handicap the Avengers, tie a hand behind their back that Thor is mopey.
Yeah, and by the way, like, remember what I was saying earlier about, like, the messy future? Like, Smart Hulk is a nice knot to have to untie.
But can you guys quickly just give me all the, personality changes? Okay, you have Smart Hulk.
Yep.
You have...
But, like, handsome Smart Hulk. It's very strange.
Okay. Handsome Smart Hulk.
Who takes selfies?
Fat Crybaby Thor.
Yeah, Crybaby Fat Lebowski Thor.
Lebowski Thor.
Family man, Tony Stark.
That's true.
Who also casually invents stuff overnight, still with all the stuff, even though he's cast off technology and all this kind of thing. Yeah.
Okay, Iron Man, who literally doesn't make sense. And then, what was the last one? There was another one that you guys said changed.
Oops, we made Captain Marvel too powerful.
Oh right. And Captain America becomes like emo Jughead from Riverdale.
Yeah. No, he
stays
Captain
the
America.
Same.
He's still
being
America.
True to himself of like he's always trying to find the bright side of things, and deal with things and cheer people up, but it's just like a lot.
By the way, there's a fantastic fight between two Captain Americas that is awesome. Makes no sense for the movie that
that's
they're telling you you're watching. Yeah, there's a cap on cap fight.
But it's funny because he thinks
it's are in this
Loki.
Movie.
Saturday, 12, 25.
Just think about it.
You can cut together a good movie from what's in here.
You think?
So I say we're seeing I always felt like we're watching the scenes in between the good scenes. That's how the movie felt.
Whereas a good movie is usually just the good scenes.
Yeah.
I want to see the 84-minute version of this movie.
But by the way, there's also a scene in it where, okay, so we go back to Avengers 1, and Hulk is essentially a monster, right? Like, that's what they've told you. Like, he's an out-of-control monster. And, like, the most in control he is he chooses to beat up Loki, right? Like, that's the thing they do. In this movie, there's a scene where they're showing you, like, the ha-ha-ha after the fight, and all the Avengers get into an elevator, and they tell Hulk to take the stairs. And he goes, oh, Hulk doesn't take stairs, and then walks down the stairs. And it's, by the way, legitimately funny. But, like, we're still with Monster Hulk. And all of a sudden now they're, like, telling Hulk, hey, man, take the stairs, like, as if they're bros. It's such a weird moment just to separate Hulk from the rest of the group. You know, like, they do a lot of that kind of stuff where the retconning is, like, just fan art. It's just, wouldn't it be funny if?
And right, what Instagram is for.
Instagram, exactly. It felt like I was looking at someone's Instagram feed. Like, you know, like, super fan Instagram feeds where, like, they do something kind of funny, but it's, like, weirdly sentimental and, like, overly fanny. It's like, what if Tony Stark and Iron Man almost kissed, you know, or Tony Stark and then Captain America almost kissed, you know, like, like, that's what the movie does over and over and over that drives me a little nuts.
So one
not
thing.
The kissing part,
so again, as the as the Captain America of this group, of the Steve Rogers of this group, bringing in the positive, I think. Okay, so if you boil this down and without taking all the very important holes and scenes that we missed and things like that, if you start this thing as the arc in Iron Man 1. And then ultimately, really with Avengers, all the way through, it's particularly Civil War, which really kicks off the plot that you're resolving here. The story that you're resolving here is the end of Civil War, is the Civil War between those two. I think if you strip a lot of it away, ultimately what you're dealing with here in this movie is the resolution of that tension between Iron Man and Tony Stark. And everyone saw it coming. And I think that... And they did it the way they had to do it, which was Tony Stark has to do something selfless because we know Captain America would.
He's got to learn to be. He's got to learn his lesson from Captain America, essentially.
Yeah, and everyone knows Chris Evans wants out of the series,
right?
And so
and Curtis Downey Jr.
They're all.
I mean,
I didn't think Robert Downey Jr.
By the way,
I feel like he's willing to make a lot more money.
I don't think Robert Downey Jr. is out of this at all. No. I think we will see him in Spider-Man: Far From Home in a video.
Can you guys
explain to me why they said that the was the Spider-Man trailer that came out too soon because it had spoilers of Endgame?
Oh, just because Tony Stark's not. They discussed Tony Stark being dead.
So Far From Home is the last movie of this phase.
Far From Home takes place after.
Endgame.
And I.
But even though 5 years have passed.
Well, this is the whole thing. I'm assuming the only way this works if all the kids who got snapped coincidentally, all the main cast of Homecoming got snapped. Now they're back.
Exactly.
They are alienated because everyone else is 5 years older.
Right.
They're stuck in high school, so they go, fuck it, let's go on vacation. That's the only way that works.
Because when Spider-Man sees his best friend, it's as if the best friend survived and Spider-Man didn't. That's the look on the friend's face. And I'm like, but that doesn't make sense. Why are you both still in high school?
Yeah. So like,
that's weird. I never thought about that.
Because the look he gives him is like, you're back. But then, like, that means he would have survived.
But Spider-Man didn't survive. Like, Spider-Man also disappeared, so he gets to stay the same age, right? The people,
but the best friend.
That means his friends all had to be snapped.
Yeah, they were all snapped. They were clearly all snapped. Convenient.
But that's fine. It's totally fine. It's like, really? So, like, Flash? You know what I mean? Like, that's, again, I... Yeah, what's that?
Quick question. Sorry, it's a non sequitur. But it just made me thinking about this whole thing of, like, who's coming back to life, who was dead. The last scene, the last shot, or one of the last shots, when they're, like, doing the memorial for Tony Stark, and then you kind of, like, look up, you know, by the lake and see everyone's face, that's, like, a composite, right? They weren't all there. That looked like a really weird shot. That looked like a really weird shot. It looked like people were CG'd in there.
I've seen on Instagram.
I thought Samuel Jackson was there standing.
There's a battle scene where many of them were there, and there's those Instagram videos of
behind
the scenes, but
set,
they were definitely not all at that funeral. They didn't even look like they were in the same depth.
I'm not sure about that one.
To me, that looks
like that looked like a weird composite to me.
Like the people for each movie, just as a side for whatever new movie they're filming, they're like, okay, now we need you in some black suits. Looks sad.
They all had to shoot on their phones in, like, their spare room.
Exactly. It was self-tape. Okay, we have been doing this for a while. I want to be respectful of everybody's time. And I would just, let's talk about...
By everybody, you mean, like, the public.
The people listening, to be honest. I'd love to know, as we wind down, Becky talked about MVPs. Who was your... You get to pick one. There's choices here. You have to make a choice here. Who is your MVP
Obviously,
of Endgame?
Obviously, Fat Thor. I mean,
he's seen the movie. Yeah, my favorite character who's from another movie.
So Lily didn't see the movie, and she picks Fat Thor. Becky, who do you pick?
100%. I actually have to really think about it a second.
Yeah, that's a tough one too. No, but, like, I get it, because, like, I wanted to spend the most time with Ant-Man, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
but, like,
he's the most
interesting.
He's the best comic relief.
So my favorite scene is Captain America and Black Widow talking about, like, when he's trying to cheer her up about seeing whales in the river. Like, that's my favorite scene in the whole movie.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's
the thing, that scene for me captured enough of, like, the depth and the sadness
you
that I didn't need
to see
the.
It again.
I didn't need to see five other scenes about it.
Yeah,
like, that was
right.
The scene. The opening scene with Hawkeye, and then this scene. That was perfect.
Yep. But I even liked, like Thor talking to his mom, I thought was amazing.
No, that was great. That was
but then,
great.
Like, he grabs the hammer and leaves, and it's like, you wrecked it. I thought he was going to grab the hammer and drop it.
Just drop it just to, like, prove that he could grab it.
Yeah, and then just get his abs back.
Yeah.
Mine is going to be Ant-Man, because what I liked about Ant-Man in this whole story is that in the story with people with superpowers, which I'm not, like, the levels of people's superpowers were not clear to me. He is immortal. He's immortal. He's not particularly bright, although they made him much smarter in this movie than any of the other movies.
For plot reasons.
I liked him being a little bit out of the place. It's kind of the way I love seeing Spider-Man. In the group, he's like an underdog within the group, and I really love that. And I think Paul Rudd, who is probably one of the most difficult to imagine in the superhero world, did a really nice job.
He's also the audience avatar, which is so great. Like, ooh, cool, Captain America.
That's such a great
dynamic. You know,
that's totally right.
Avatar. I like that. Is that a thing? Is that a term? Did you just make that up?
Yeah, I mean, you talk about, like Luke Skywalker is kind of the audience avatar in Star Wars,
Oh, that's why I love Luke Skywalker. I guess maybe we're figuring something. We've learned more about me today. My honorable mention goes to Hawkeye, because I loved seeing insane murderer Hawkeye.
I feel like my MVP. I mean, while you guys know I'm a Captain America
a new
for life,
evolution for someone too.
Yeah,
insane murderer Hawkeye.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I'm Captain America for life. I feel like Hawkeye.
Hawkeye's like chopping up bodies at the beginning of the movie.
Like. Hawkeye really, like, seeing what happens to people when they lose everything, you really see that transformation in Hawkeye. And again, because he's totally mortal, the stakes are very different for him.
Yeah,
for him and Black Widow, they have very different stakes than everyone else. And so I think, like, that makes him, you know, him surviving the battle and everything kind of more exciting to watch. And then he just has very high stakes as far as getting his family back. So.
And you know what else on that I think is really important is, like, you know, he became a crazy psycho murderer who lost his family, but he still made time for hair products.
Oh yeah, his hairdo was awesome amazing.
That's fascinating.
It was literally like, I'm gonna go murder some guys today, so I want to use the number one clippers, and this hair paste is fantastic. We're not barbarians.
And who's the LVPs of people?
I think everyone. Captain like, Marvel via being sidelined.
Not because she wasn't great, but because they.
But they just didn't write that one.
In this movie, she's an LVP because she does nothing, is what you're saying. Because she's not
Or
great.
She does so much that you're like, why wasn't she there the whole time? But I can't give her an LVP.
You know who my
way,
LVP is? My LVP, sorry, is Pepper Potts because she seemed very okay with Tony Stark dying. She was like, it's okay.
I mean, it relieves a lot.
She's like, I'm fine with it.
It relieves a lot of stress for her. She gets the whole company, and she doesn't have to worry about him coming home.
And she's a kid, and she's like, all right, great, you're dead.
By the way, all is forgiven if this turns out that the entire thing was set up by her so that she could get all the money.
Amazing.
It was an insurance scam.
But by the, you know what else on that too? Like my wife.
She's like, Tony, snap the glove.
Come on. She's like, hey, Thanos, you don't know me, but you know, like, but in the beginning of the movie, it was like they had a lot of scenes with Tony and the kid, and it was like it just felt like Gwyneth scheduling issues. Like that movie, the first half of the movie felt like. Really? The mom's not here for this? The mom's not here for this? Like, it had that kind of feeling. It's not like she was working. Like, shit was got real, you know? Like, literally, there's a line where, like, she's upstairs.
It always pissed me off because that was always such a mistake in casting Gwyneth Paltrow in that role.
I know. Like, it's not
like, for a franchise that has 22 movies, don't cast someone who's busy.
Yeah, and doesn't really want to do it. Because they got rid of, what's her name, really quick, because she didn't want to do it.
Natalie Portman.
Natalie Portman. No, what I was going to say, too, is, like, one of the things about the LVPs thing is, like, is also, like, the entire cast of Black Panther. You know what I mean? Like, none of those people showed up. Like, why did they sideline them, too? Like, they got Captain Marveled as well. Like, there's a scene in it where...
Well, to be fair, they're dead until the last battle. Oh, no, wait, they're not.
I don't know the character name, but there are about four of them that didn't get
his warrior
from the main characters.
Yeah,
his general and...
Why wasn't she going back in time with them? And they have crazy, amazing technology.
That would have been so helpful.
The vibranium, what that could have done to help them get the Infinity Wars.
Exactly.
They definitely could have built a gauntlet using vibranium.
Oh, my God.
For sure.
By the way, the Wakandans making a gauntlet... while the rest of the movie's happening is like a thing.
That would be an amazing story, right? Like with the science behind building a gauntlet
again,
with Shuri.
The three
kind
of you
driving.
Can write a better movie.
Don't worry, we could have still found a way to kill Tony Stark. I'm sure of it. I'm sure of it.
By the way, are you getting some kind of indication of how annoying I am in the writer's room?
No, I mean, I feel like everyone should just hire you to consult in the writer's room. Like, think about the better movies you would have.
It's better.
I will tell you, Mike, the next time I'm executive producing a superhero movie, I will make sure you are hired as a consultant.
I started, let Mike Roberts turn this ship around. Yeah, this is my the Russo brothers. I mean, I think we should close on recognizing that the Russo brothers did do something that no one else has been able to do, and they changed the entire dimensions of the superhero movies.
I think this movie once again proves that they put all the ideas in the movie.
There's no bad ideas. This is the safe space.
Mike Roberts as a consultant to just come in at, you know, at the end and just keep only the good ideas.
But listen, as much as I love a compliment, and I'll keep them coming, but the reason I feel this way about Endgame is because of how I think absolutely they succeeded with Civil War, Winter Soldier, and
There are really, truly some awesome movies, and I do agree that overall it's quite a feat,
when you look
at the whole landscape of them.
I love that seeing this movie with all its flaws, though. I mean, this is another thing that's great, is that you can see a movie have its flaws, but it still immerses you and makes you love it, that Becky went back and started watching all the movies that I've been trying to get her to watch over the years.
Well, no, in preparation, I watched Civil War last week thinking, like, people talk about how this is, like, an important one and a good one, and I watched, and I was like, Spider-Man makes sense. Infinity War makes sense.
Yeah. exactly.
This you one get is definitely going to make more. So that, and then my friend and I had plans to see Captain Marvel and Endgame, and he insisted that we had to see Marvel first, which is not a bad choice because now then I could be annoyed during Endgame, and it was a great movie. And then after Endgame, I was like, well, now I got to see Doctor Strange.
Yeah. So, wait, you haven't seen it yet?
No, I had never seen
it.
Seen
you're going to like it, yeah.
And I like it.
You've seen Ragnarok, right, Beck, of course?
Yeah, I saw Ragnarok.
By the way, Ragnarok's the best one.
Yeah.
Like, it is the best one, by far.
Hands down.
Is there, what, you know, guys didn't really mention Guardians. Is there going to be a Guardians 3 or not possible?
Yeah. Well, by the way, Fat Thor is definitely a character in Guardians 3.
Yeah, they like,
does that mean there's no more Gamora?
No, it's actually going to be called.
Guardians 3 is about getting Gamora.
It's going to be a play on the search for Spock. It's going to be the search for Gamora. They end on two really great notes for Guardians, because the Guardians play almost no role. Although I really enjoyed that Nebula played a big role, because in the actual Infinity Gauntlet original story, Nebula is a totally different character in a lot of ways, but she is critical to the unraveling of the Infinity Gauntlet in the original, and I love Karen Gillan as Nebula, so yeah. I'm glad that they didn't, like, stuff her into a corner. There's someone who they didn't stuff. I mean, not everything made sense with her, but she's Thanos' daughter, and they made her very relevant, and they gave her a really strong role, and to me, that was a great element of it. But they end the Guardians of the Galaxy bit with Thor joining the Guardians of the Galaxy and calling them the Asgardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, And like, what's his name? Peter Quill hating it.
Yeah.
But by the way, that's another thing, too, where it was like, did Chris Hemsworth and what's his name, Chris Pratt, get final cut? Because there's a kind of a funny joke where they're like bantering a little, but it goes on forever.
Yeah.
Well, that's your commercial for Guardians 3, which if those two are going to carry it, that's a nice way to do it.
I guess so.
They don't have to. I mean, this is what they've done that's amazing, is that they've demystified the notion that if you're going to see one of these stories, you're not going to. And this is the way comic books work, right? How many times does Wolverine team up with Spider-Man? How many times do you see, an X-Men character appear in the Avengers, right? This is kind of the way it's supposed to be. So the idea that Thor is in a single Guardians movie is terrific, cool. And who wants to see? I mean,
it's
only
like Hulk being in Ragnarok.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
It enriches.
Oh. By the way, like, okay, so where is the version of this movie? Where can I just say? I'll say the last thing if you're trying to shut me up. But like, where is the version of this movie where they snap and they're back on the battlefield in Wakanda, and then Bruce Banner gets knocked out of the Hulkbuster suit and the Hulk comes out. You know what I mean? And Thor shows up and he goes for the head. You know, like, that was, I know it's maybe obvious, but like, I tell my son bedtime stories every night, right? About a toad and a fly. And the ending of the story is always that the toad is allergic to pickles and he eats pickles and barfs. And like, I think the rest of the story is non.
Is this an original production of Mike Barber?
Yeah, this is me. Like, this is like, oh shit, I gotta tell him a story. So, every story is different. It's like one time he's riding a bike, but as long as he barfs at the end, everything's fine. And I feel like we all have that little kid in us where we want the movie to give us what we want to do. So like, if you made an Avengers movie, it's called Avengers, the best one ever, and then you watched it and there's no Avengers, you can't go, I subverted your expectations. You're an asshole, right? Which is my problem with Last Jedi.
Right.
Maybe you guys need the group therapy.
But that's the thing, is like, why not have the snap and do it over, and then have Tony Stark die, and then blah blah blah, and then blah blah blah. Like, all, you know what I mean? Like do it the way you want to do. Like, same ending of the movie, but why not play it again? Like, that's the movie you set up. But the snap happens, by the way, and there's like a 7 or 10 minute wait for everyone to show up, and essentially, I'm not joking, Doctor Strange waits to introduce the Avengers at the most plot, easiest point in the movie. So like, doors in space open up 10 minutes later and all the Avengers walk through that were unsnapped. And it was literally like, the time was taken with, Doctor Strange going, hey, I've got all these guys. You got them? Yep. Okay. And they're on walkie-talkies. All right. Now, at the same time, we're going to open all the doors and walk through, because if we come at different times, it's going to look weird. Like, that's the plot of the movie. They show up in such a theatrical way that is just convenience.
Although it didn't give me, it gave me chills. Okay,
it's like lizard brain though. You know what I mean? It's like you, it forces you to like the movie in that moment.
Fair enough.
Correct.
All right, that makes a lot of sense. That sums up the movie a lot of ways. All right, let's segue from the Avengers and let's just as we close out or before we close out, is there anything anyone wants to recommend that they're watching? Or Mike, I know you're not always able to talk about what you're working on, but I don't know if there's anything in particular you want to encourage people to watch, whether it's yours or somebody else's.
Unsolicited, I think Rise of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is a fantastic show on Nickelodeon, and everyone should be watching it. I'm not saying that for any reason other than it's such a great show. Go watch it right now.
Awesome.
Big
Ninja Turtles fan.
Big Ninja Turtles fan. Totally not anything to do with what I'm doing. But can I ask you guys a question with Cobra Kai?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I was unprepared for how much punching and fighting as the solution to the problem there is in that show.
I don't know if you got a chance to listen.
Discusses this.
Do our last episode.
I listened to the last one. I thought I listened to last week. Maybe I missed.
No, in fairness, we put out like four episodes last week because we kept having to do. But Cobra Kai's a big.
I heard
subject
all the Comic-Con stuff with those guys that you did.
Yeah. So no, we did there was a Cobra Kai one that came out yesterday, but not with a lot of fanfare.
Where I make two specific points. One being that this is not a show for kids. Because the last season and the last episode of last season, like fully, even though they're teenagers, the way Riverdale is not a show for kids, I'm assuming.
Right.
And so there's that.
Then but no one goes to jail.
Right.
Yeah, they should all be in jail.
Becky brings that up. Becky was like, you know, at the end, there should definitely have been more police because
they're pounding
crimes,
each other in school.
There were crimes, multiple crimes being committed.
Yeah.
But also, I don't know why this bothers me so much. When if this was a like Taken type movie or even Avengers or whatever, you just roll with it. But seeing kids with no gloves on.
Yeah,
and no protection or anything.
Each other.
Like, right,
each other in
the shit out of each other, knowing full well that not only would there be nose broken, people would have their nose broken, but anybody that punches somebody without a glove, who's a kid especially, who doesn't, you know, even know what they're doing, or multiple punches, you break your hand. Like, it just doesn't make sense.
No, they wear gloves. And that's what by the way, the original one was like, don't fight not at a tournament. Like, that was kind of, you know what I mean? Like, I just think, like, everything about the show works except for how much kids pounding on each other there is.
I think they really raised that this season, and that was one of the things that I would say is my possible complaint.
So the point I would make about that is that however much Daniel and Johnny hate each other, they actually do show restraint. Both of them do.
Yeah.
At different times. And I think one of the... it's a TV show, and they want it to be fun. And as much as this is a drama, like, there's a certain tongue-in-cheek element to it and self-awareness that is part of what they have promised the viewers. But I think the other thing is that part of what we're seeing is Daniel and Johnny... failing to a degree as senseis because they've learned all this control in their own ways, but they've let the monster out of the cage with these kids that they're teaching and using and getting involved in their own sort of Capulet Montague blood feud. So Daniel and Johnny, when they sit down at the table, are kind of civilized, but then they've been teaching all these other lessons and building this paranoia between these two groups, and that's why the kids get out of control. Now, that being said, the fighting is also the fighting is quite updated from the parking lot fight of the first Karate Kid.
Right.
Where it's like one punch or two punches max.
So
do you think that's going to become an issue though? Like the ramifications of.
Yeah. Well, have you finished season two of Karate Kid?
No, I haven't.
So season two of Karate Kid has very, 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 very harsh consequences for the fighting getting out of control.
Okay.
Like,
all right. Okay.
Upsetting. Okay. Like Becky was the most emotional, but very upsetting consequences.
He's very upsetting.
Okay, because it's a bit cartoony in the
middle. Like very traumatic. I feel like what happened in the ending is actually quite traumatic, and that better be dealt with in season three. How, like, messed up it,
it
is.
It escalates and it escalates and escalates it, where like, the kids take the beef too
West
far.
West Side Story, but like it gets, you know, a bit.
I think they are going to have to learn that lesson, and now the kids have learned it in a horrible way, and the parents have learned it in a horrible way. I think I don't know how dark they're going to take those consequences, but they make you feel at the end that the whole last episode is this huge rumble at the school, and you're actually like biting down, nervous, because you're like, oh my goodness, this is going to go too far.
How far are you into it?
Me? Oh, only a few episodes. I can't remember the last one I saw.
I'm
more asking because I hope that becomes a thing, because right now I'm a little bit like, it's feeling like a cartoon.
It will continue to feel like a cartoon. And at the very end, there's like some more serious consequences to it.
It's a little cartoony, but yeah, they set you definitely up to feel the consequences in season three. I also think if they go more than three seasons, there's a natural arc, I think, that would end in season three. And then if they're going to be fighting, then maybe they pull a little Karate Kid 2 thing, right? Like Daniel's enemy in Karate Kid 2 is like a bona fide gangster who hurts people and kills people, right?
Yeah.
So I think at a certain point, maybe they'll have to become superheroes, but
vigilantes.
Yeah, exactly. They'll have to become superheroes.
Get to the part where Johnny doesn't know how to use the internet, and did you want to
I don't know. Listen, I feel like, by the way, if you read that scene as him being sort of like, ooh, contrarian, then I'm okay with it. You know what I mean? Like, I think he does know, but he's
like anti-society.
No, he's like, oh, what am I, a nerd? You know?
That's totally his character.
He's literally like, oh, sorry, I was going to learn to use the internet, but, you know, I like girls. Like, he's one of those guys.
Yeah,
that's totally his character.
That's really funny.
Okay, Becky, you watching anything?
Yeah, when I'm not watching superhero movies, I'm watching the full contact sport of Great British Baking Show. I had a lot of issues going into season five. It took me like well over a year to watch it because they changed the hosts, and I was very anti the new hosts. But I've come around to them. I actually quite like them. Not as funny as the original, but still enjoying. Miss Mary Berry terribly, but that's another story. So I'm working my way through season five. Yeah, she got snapped. Working my way through season five, and watching with me is no joke. There's a lot of shouting. There's a lot of predictions. But I'm having a good time. Even Vlad has come around to be like, yeah, it's a pretty good show. I'm like, yeah, I know. It's the best show there is. So Great British Baking Show, seasons 5 and 6 on Netflix. Crushing it.
And
so you guys watching Barry?
I'm very behind. I only saw the first couple apps, but we're kind of going through our binges of like Veep. We'll probably do Barry this weekend. Yeah.
Barry may be the best show on TV right now.
So that's a bold comment, and we'll have to come back to that because I feel like Barry season one was so good, and the ending was such an impressive moment and decision that I actually Becky and I were talking about this when we were in LA. I'm like, do they even need a season two of Barry?
Have you seen season
two? No, I haven't seen season two yet. So if you're telling me that it's so good, then I'm blown away because I was worried about a season two of Barry because I'm like, what exactly are they going to do?
Season one is pretty.
Here's the thing. Season two, episode five is so good that I think it's one of the best TV episodes I've seen maybe ever. And it's for none of the reasons that you think.
Okay.
All right.
That's
awesome. I'm excited. I mean, I think I've only seen the first two apps, so we'll be catching up.
And Lil, what are you watching?
I finished all of The Last Kingdom.
Ooh.
So
Is the show over, or are you just caught up?
No, they're filming season four right now. And
Lily, it feels like there were nine seasons of this show.
Three seasons, and it's excellent. And I am heading back to finish Deadly Class, because we're going to be hanging with Luke Tenney at Comic-Con, I figured I had four more episodes.
That is totally true, and I really like Deadly Class. I think Deadly Class is not perfect by any means, but
wanders around a little bit, but it's entertaining.
And I love the cast. I absolutely love the cast. Those kids really, really, really have really grew on me, and the characters. And anyways, I really liked the way season one's last episode is nuts, but I enjoyed it. I'm watching Billions season four with Allie. We're working our way through it, and I love that show. Season four is the best season of that show, but only because you've gotten through seasons one through three, and they've really flipped.
One through three is amazing.
They flipped the dynamics in season four in the way that I think you kind of have to after three seasons of a drama like this. Like, it's not about Axe and Rhodes trying to destroy each other. The power dynamics are changing in all the different relationships. And the acting, you get to see Damian Lewis and Paul Giamatti on screen a number of times. And, like, that's one of the things that drives me nuts about, like, a movie like Heat, right? Which I boldly say is super overrated. And they make a big deal about the 3 minutes in which De Niro and Pacino are on screen together, which is fine. It's a fine scene, whatever, who cares? But Paul Giamatti and Damian Lewis are the people driving this show, and you almost never see them on camera together because they're such mortal enemies. Well, now they've been forced to be in the same room together, and the chemistry between those two is absolutely amazing. And I don't know if they can go back to them not being having a line of communication between them, because it's so fun to watch them.
No, yeah, that's what
talk
season
to each other.
Three is so good.
Yeah. So Billions season four, awesome, great show on Showtime, great acting, I'm super impressed. Whereas, like, Ray Donovan completely lost steam at fourth season.
that show shit the bed.
Yeah.
It's such a good show, and it just, like, imploded on itself.
Yeah, that's one where I'm just going to read the Wikipedia entry to find out what happened in the end, whereas Billions, it's got a whole new life to it, so that's great. All right, Mike, where can people follow you?
The Mike Roberts, both on Instagram and Twitter, I think. That's probably the best place.
Yeah, just get to see all your cool drawings and behind.
All your drawings, yeah. You call doodles, yes. I call art.
They're my warm-up drawings.
Oh, my goodness.
These days, I don't have time for much else.
Oh, man. Mike's warm-up drawings. My goal is to at some point get to be able to make Mike's warm-up drawings a little
hard. Wait, I know we have Pixar people in the orbit, so I can't say anything. You know what I mean?
Not on this phone call, though, so don't worry. And Lily, where can people follow you?
GGK Gomez on Twitter. I am back, people. As Lon's recognized, you start noticing you get likes from me when I show up again. So I am back.
Welcome back.
Becky.
You'll follow me on Twitter at PaperBKPrincess.
And you can follow me at Pancake4Table on Twitter and Instagram. You can follow all of the Friday Night Movie fun at Fry Night Movie on Twitter and Instagram, and FridayNightMoviePod.com. And the march to the All-Star Comic-Con in Tyson's Corner, Virginia on June 8th and 9th is coming. We are going to be there with t-shirts and a spinning wheel and little photo booth props and our podcasting equipment. And everyone who hears this who wants to come up and do a bit with us on the show, you are invited to do it. It's going to be a lot of fun. And with that, the music from What Does It Eat will kick in, and we will dance our way into the evening or morning, depending on which time zone you're in. Bye-bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye. Like, even if you're not sure, like, you can't see it through her eyes.
That's a good point. Oh, that's a deep artistic comment you got there. I can't.
Whatever. When Vlad draws me, I always come out looking like a monkey. It's terrible. It makes me so angry. He's just not allowed to draw me anymore.
He's just being passive aggressive.
Yeah. No. It's his way of getting out of drawing me, because he's like, see, I don't do a good job.
Well, listen, I also understand the pressure of, like, getting that. Like, I don't like it when my mom asks me to draw her stuff, because I feel like I can't. Like, it's too sentimental, you know? Like, it's, like, a weird thing. So maybe it's that.
Yeah. Maybe he loves me so much he can't draw me. That's
what I'm
saying.